Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of Young Hollywood Actors and the Hollywood Parents Guide. And today my guest on the Hometown to Hollywood podcast is Michael Orland. Michael is a pianist, arranger, vocal coach, and musical director, best known for his work as the associate musical director on American Idol for 16 seasons. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you.
I'm so happy to be here with you in your studio.
How crazy is that?
It's cool.
That was sweet that we're neighbors and that you came over to my place.
It took me 5 minutes to get here. Which
is that the best? How was traffic? Oh, you took an Uber.
No. Luckily, it was LA, but there was no traffic.
It's the best.
It's so nice. I just want to know, first of all, starting right off, when did you know you wanted to have a career in music?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the story goes like this, that my mother and father can remember. When I was, I'm dating myself now, but when I was like 3 or 4, whenever Mary Poppins came out, the original one, not Mary Poppins Returns, I went to see that movie and I was obsessed with it. And we had a piano at my house because my mother played, my father played, my grandmother, Dorothy, was played concert piano at Brooklyn Academy of Music, like a long time ago. But, and we had a piano, and I went to go see Mary Poppins, and I came home and I just by ear started playing some of the songs. And
at
so
three?
I was 3 years old. And so, and my mother, so I literally made both my grandmothers and my mother and father, I would make my aunts and uncles take me to see the movie again. I went like 10 times to the movie. I was obsessed with it. And then I literally was learning all the songs. And at 4, my mom took me to a piano teacher. Her name was Shirley Siegel. May she rest in peace. She was the best. And in Worcester, Massachusetts. And she's like, I'm so sorry. It's a little too young to start right now. My mother's like, sit down. And so, you know, I played, you know, supercalifragilistic or whatever. And she's like, okay, we'll start. And so that was it. And I started taking piano lessons. I was obsessed with it. My mother and father used to have to make me stop practicing to go do my schoolwork. I literally sat at the piano. I had no friends growing up. My sister and brother, when we were growing up, would go out and play with all the neighborhood kids. I sat and I teethed on the little wooden console stereo and listened to, you know, albums and stuff. It was everything. Everything music was the best. And I really wanted to do it, and I was obsessed with it. But when it came time to go to college, my mother and father, and I don't know if I would be the same way. And I know, I will talk about this later with parents and stuff, but my mother and father convinced me I should go to school to be an accountant because I loved math and numbers.
Oh.
So, now, I just fast forward to, I forgive them today because I love them and they're the most supportive parents. I have the most supportive family in the world. But they did not, and they were like, you know, every April 16th after tax season, you can go chill out and sit at the piano and relax. And I tried it. I did try it because I didn't have an option. And I went to UMass because I just like wanted to just do anything and get it over with. I studied accounting. I literally after 2 years dropped out. I was like, I have to do music. This is how passionate I am about it. I was just not, and I love math, and my accountant loves me today. I bring the most detailed records to him, but I had to do it. It was literally the only thing I was passionate about, and I dropped out and moved to New York, and as a matter of fact, with my friend Amy Engelberg, who I went to college with, who's been on your podcast. So it's crazy the whole way it happened. Now, while I don't encourage kids to drop out of school, I do encourage everybody to follow what they're passionate about, even if it means going to get a degree in something else and having a waiter job to pay your bills. But the passion thing has to be, or it will never work. And so I didn't care what I had to do when I moved to New York and I dropped out. And I don't want to say I starved, because as you can tell, I didn't. But I did whatever I had to do, and I got lucky. And I know people go, oh, you're making too little of it. I really got lucky. Now, I did the work. I did the prep. I had the technique. I did all the piano lessons. I did that. But so much of this business, and even more so today, is being in the right place at the right time and meeting the right people. So it's so, it happened. It just happened for me, and I was so lucky. And I just think even like today, if I were trying to do what I do, even though it's so much easier than being an actor, or, you know, it's less competitive as of what actors go through and singers and dancers and stuff, but it's so hard today. And that's why the passion has to be there, the technique has to be there, and then the rest is all luck and getting the door open by being in the right place at the right time or just meeting the right person. That's all it is.
Well, you know, the preparation, by the time you were in New York and things were starting to happen for you, you'd put in way more than your 10,000 hours. You'd put in like 30,000 hours or 40,000 hours. Like, how can you even quantify?
Exactly right. And, you know, my it's so funny because my piano teacher, I used to bring, like, you know, Barry Manilow books and Billy Joel books and the Carpenter song books to my piano lesson. She's like, nope, only classical. Ooh. And I would just, like, you know, I'd play all the show tunes and the pop tunes when I got home, but she would not. She only wanted me to do technique on classical, and I'm so appreciative of that today. Because, I mean, and reading classical music is not my favorite thing, but I'm so grateful for that learning thing, because it's like when dancers say, oh yeah, when you learn ballet, it's
foundational.
Exactly right. So I was so happy that I did that, and I had that, and now I love playing every style, jazz, pop, show tunes, top, you know, 100, R&B, whatever it is, I love all of it.
And you can.
Yeah, and I can. I think it gave me that foundation.
Well, and I want to loop back to an interesting thing about your parents. What you're talking about, that tension, if you will, dramatic, you know, dynamic tension between, you know, what your passion is and your parents' love for you, that they're worried for you. They want the best for you.
Yes.
And, you know, what does that look like, wanting the best for you? Well, wanting you to live indoors and not starve. So to your parents, in this case, and to parents across the world, yep, in many cases, is the same thing. Like, no, please, darling, we love and acknowledge your passion, but we really want you to survive, and so please learn this practical thing. Please have this in your back pocket. And frankly, it's kind of interesting to me. You know, music and math are often very associated, right, those two parts of the brain. But it's not a terrible thing that you had some sort of business and accounting background, because to me, and I'm an artist at heart my whole life, one form or another, it always kind of makes me sad how vulnerable many artists are to not understanding numbers at all. And it hurts them and it bites them. And when they just kind of go la 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 when they see numbers, mm-hmm, that's also not a good thing.
No, so, you're right.
You know, it's interesting that it's not a terrible thing that you can understand numbers and basic, you know, businessy, mathy things.
Right.
Because I'm sure that has served you. So, like, I also just kind of want everybody to notice, like, it's brilliant to pursue your passion with both feet in, like, jump in. But also, you know, be a little bit well-rounded. Know a little bit about some things that will probably also serve you in your big life.
100%. 100%, yeah. I agree with that. But, you know, the thing is that it just, I think you just have to have that passion in order to do what you want to do. I think if people just, like, you know, watch reality TV singing shows and think, oh, they can, you know, go up and sing a song and just get famous in 10 weeks. It's not reality.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Oh, my God.
Because that kills me. That kills me. I feel so passionately that is a disservice to so many talented, passionate young people out there who think, if I just get that one break, I'm good. Yes. That's all I need to do.
Yeah.
And it's just not true.
It's the only negative thing I find about those shows, because everything else about it I love. I've worked on American Idol for 16 years. It was the greatest experience of my life working with those kids. I wouldn't trade it for the world. They've become lifelong friends of mine, and I get to be there at the beginning and watch an unknown Carrie Underwood, you know, not, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff.
It's just
like, it's ridiculous. And crying when Jennifer Hudson gets voted off, because how does America not see how talented that woman is?
She's done okay.
I think she's fine. After I went to the premiere of Dreamgirls with her, I was like, okay. I was okay. But the bad thing about those shows is it gives people a false sense of, you don't realize you have to have a work ethic in this business. You have to. It's just not reality TV star. And it's just, and it gives you, like, the ones that left Idol and still have a career today, Jordan Sparks, Adam Lambert, all those people, Constantine Maroulis, they work night and day. They don't stop working on their craft, and they will do whatever it takes to do the work. And those are the people that are still successful today, that you can't fake it. And shows like Idol and The Voice and America's Got Talent give people a false sense of making it in this business, and it's the only negative thing to me. Really the only.
It's a structural negative problem. It's not a negative problem that a particular show has. It's just that idea that you can step in, get lucky, and you're good. Because every single artist I know, musical artist, theater artist, what have you, mm-hmm. they work so hard.
Absolutely.
You can't believe how hard they work and how much they work. And what we see is the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely.
There's so much more underneath it.
Absolutely.
So I'm really happy that you brought that up, because that's actually just bothered me. And it's
unbelievable.
If people only knew how much work it really takes to succeed, two good things would come of that. A lot of people who really don't have any business going down that path would go, oh yeah, I don't want to work that hard. And they do something else that they're better suited for. They'd be happy. They'd have a good life. And then the people who really might have the talent and the drive would go, oh, I need to work harder. And then they might succeed.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, is that people can get on something like that or do one part of show business and go, wait, I'm more passionate about, I want to be a director.
Yeah.
Or I want to be a songwriter. I don't want to be in front of the microphone. I want to be behind the scenes and write some hit songs for somebody. There are so many different parts of this business, which is so great. But, you know, again, those TV shows are... That's what they are. They're TV shows. They're not talent shows. We've had so many people along the years that get cut for no reason, and who don't make it past a certain way, and people are mind boggled at it. Go, how does so and so get voted off, and how does this one not win? How did Captain McPhee not whatever? And it's just, it doesn't matter. That's the thing. It's like you said about Jennifer Hudson. Didn't matter that she came on sixth from the end. Look at her today.
Yeah.
She's. But the thing is that there are so many great things about it, but I've had so many talented people audition for those shows and not make it. And I go, listen, it's a crapshoot, like most of show business. Do you have to go for it? You have nothing to lose. And if something good comes out of it, then if you make it to the lucky top 10, then you have a fast pass to show business. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. all it is. It's a quick little... Someone gave you the VIP pass at Disney.
Yeah, but you still have to, when you get in that door, you still have to have what it takes, including the incredible work ethic.
Exactly, you have to do the work. Yeah. It just doesn't keep getting handed to you. And a lot of, in the early seasons, when 30 million people a night were watching American Idol, the first 8 seasons, and, we would go out with these kids afterwards, and people would mob them, and they were like, it was unreal. But the ones that are still working today are all the ones that did all that work, and they still do that work, and they are still passionate, and they don't want to stop.
Well, when you love something so much, it doesn't feel like work. Like you, as a child, not being willing to leave the keyboard to go out and play with the neighbor kids, because nothing was more rewarding to you.
It's what happens today. My friends always say to me, why don't you go on a vacation? I'm like... I'm going to Vegas this weekend to do some shows. I'm like, I'm playing for an hour and a half each night. And what am I doing? I go on a cruise ship a couple months ago, and I did one night, 2 45-minute shows, and I'm on a cruise ship for a week. I'm like, I play when I go to work. There's nothing, even at the most stressful times of American Idol, during the Hollywood week and the finale, there's nothing stressful about what I do. I don't care if I'm sitting at a piano 16 hours a day. It's just, I think about how high the numbers on my Fitbit will go if I play some up-tempos.
So. Is that true?
It kind of is, I'm sorry to say. You got to get Fitbit to work on that. Because if I play a lot of up-tempo numbers, I get like 14,000 steps at the end and I didn't move.
That's hilarious. Okay, Fitbit. Shout out, Fitbit. Get on that.
Come on, I'm obsessed with my Fitbit.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
I need to get a new one. So your training has been primarily, you've been self-taught, but you also had some teachers along the way.
Yes. I promised my parents if I didn't get a job because I didn't have a college degree, I would go back, and I never ended up going back. I got lucky. I played in all the piano bars in New York City. I played in piano bars. Now people are like, you got to pay your dues. I worked in piano bars from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. 6 nights a week. That was like my waiter job. But I wouldn't have traded it for the world. And after 5.5 years, yes, I got burned out from doing that. But I learned every show tune, every pop song ever written, which kind of helped me when I got to American Idol in 2002.
Because you knew them.
I knew like every song ever written. I know most songs. I mean, like, and if I've heard it a couple times, I can just play it, whatever. But it's gotten me a few jobs. It got me my job at American Idol. I just got called in to help at the end of season one, and then we all went to Vegas to do this television special, and my bosses were like, all right, we're just waiting to get some music to put this medley together. I'm like, well, what's the music? And they're telling me, I'm like, oh, I know that one. I know that one. Let me hear that one. Okay, here's how it goes. And they were like, well, you just got a job full-time on the series.
That is so cool.
Yeah, no, it's great. But I don't, but it's definitely a lot of self-taught. Like, you know, I could bone up on a couple things technically. There are piano players that can technically play circles around me. I just, one of my thing, you know, it's like the difference between being an accompanist and a pianist. I don't call myself a pianist, I call myself an accompanist. Like when I play for Kristen Chenoweth and Catherine McPhee and all these amazing people that I'm obsessed with and love, Kristen is one of the most fun people I've ever worked with in my whole life. It's moving and rewarding. She's the most generous, loving, down-to-earth, real. Who you see on stage is who she is off stage. There's nothing phony about it. There's nothing called in. Everything she says sounds like she's saying it at the top of right, just coming out of her mouth. She's so real. She wears her heart on her sleeve. I always say, if you want to see me ever do everything I can do, come see me play for Kristen, because she does up-tempo, ballads, country, jazz, you know, pop, theater, comedy. She does everything. And I've been working on her new album. Woo! And I'm just so excited about it, and I can't wait for people to hear it. And being produced by Steve Tyrell, and she's like a freaking wonder of the world.
I mean, adore her.
I know
as
you guys
you know.
Do. I know you do. And she loves you guys so much. We talk about the love.
The love is real, boy.
And that was so fun. You know, I had not seen Descendants before. When I met Dove when we were doing Hairspray Live, and then I went back and watched it, I was like, oh my God, how crazy that they're playing together again.
Again. Because they're just, you know.
They are.
Kristen's the only person I will voluntarily share mommy duties with, because,
I mean, I know, Kristen's obsessed with your girl, and as all of us are, but.
I love all the overlapping circles in our lives.
I know, it's the best. It's the best.
So how did you get started as a vocal coach?
So
that's different.
It's a little bit different. So yeah. When I was in, even living in New York and stuff, doing piano bar at night, and I was playing for a lot of the Broadway people, and they would do their nightclub acts and stuff, and I would play for them, like at all the different piano bars, the Downtown Mamas and the Duplex, all these historic clubs there. And and Rainbow and Stars. I played at Rainbow and Stars in New York. That's not even there anymore. But so I would like be doing, I would, that's what I was doing during the day. I was just coaching a lot of people. And, I just literally just fell into it. Someone's like, oh, can you help me with this audition? And I love doing it. And so I don't really do the technique thing. So if somebody's looking for voice lessons per se, I would send them to a various amount of different people, depending on if they want male, female, price range, all that stuff. And I have great, great, great people I love to recommend. I'm so passionate about doing it. I love playing. I'm like one of those crazy piano guys that love playing auditions. I play a lot of those Broadway auditions when I come to LA. And people are like, how do you play auditions? I'm like, I love it. I literally, it's like doing American Idol auditions that I did for 10 years. It's like, you might find the next amazing somebody. I remember, like, Leslie Odom, when he came into an audition, like, 12 years ago. I don't remember, and I was, like, obsessed with that man, and I didn't, and now he's a huge star, but he wasn't really then, and I was like, who is this guy?
It's like being in casting, excitement.
Right, right,
you know?
It really is, but I love the coaching thing. I love helping people find material. I love doing arrangements. I love helping people with their performance thing. I love, the biggest thing that I do as a coach, and especially on American Idol, because nobody ever had time for technique on that show, we build confidence in people, and that's to watch somebody become like this confident performer and like on Idol in the course of 10 or 12 weeks is that I can't explain how rewarding that is to watch that.
That's a huge piece of success in anything,
yeah,
but also vocally, to have the confidence. It's almost a spiritual aspect,
mm-hmm.
You know, technique, very important, but confidence, it lets you take chances.
It does. And it's, I don't know, it's very attractive to watch somebody who's confident. I mean, there's a difference between confident and cocky, but when you watch a confident performer, and I don't even care anymore. Like, when I was younger, I probably loved that girl that could, you know, belt the high E flat and the high F and, you know, not mixing and all that. Today, I just want to know somebody's connected to what they're singing about, and it's everything to me. Because you can have 5 notes in your range. If you can make me feel something, then you're perfect.
I'm so happy you said that, because I think a lot of people, they mistake range and, you know, nice pitch for, it doesn't, you can have all that. You don't necessarily move us emotionally. No. And what we want when we're listening to somebody sing, frankly, we're not looking for stellar technique always. We're looking to feel something.
Absolutely. And someone doesn't even have to have the best technique. It's like, if somebody, you know, can just tell me what they're singing about. And I oftentimes do this thing where you just, if you sing to somebody, if you're singing to someone specific when you are singing your song, it takes it to that place. But I love when a lot of my students and a lot of people that I work with, when they can't get through a song because it's so tough emotionally, and I'm like, we have to just keep working through it. And I say, now let's work it. Now let's just do only the technical part of it. Don't get emotionally attached right now. Because I have a couple people that, like, literally, they you just can't get through songs. And you have to get through songs enough, because we don't want to watch a performer have a breakdown.
No, and also, frankly, I mean, if you're feeling a lot of emotion, it can close your throat up and make it hard to sing, literally.
Absolutely, it does. But to be able to go there, to let your audience have their own breakdown and watch you, like, just on the verge. Like, Kristen is so good at that. She, like, I don't even know how she does it, but she can, like, make a tear fall and just control it. Where I, like, if I start crying, it's over.
It's over.
It's over.
So how do you do that? Like, what? Any hot tips?
I don't know, but we should call Kristen on FaceTime.
I'm gonna ask her.
No, it's crazy, but again, I think that's a technique, and I think that's something you are able to put, I don't know.
It's like managing your emotional self. It's very complex to be able to sing well.
I was just going to say, it's so much work to be a great performer. Like, people don't realize that. The other thing, again, we were talking about work ethic. Kristen is a rehearsal monger, and she loves to rehearse, and that's why she's that good. There are people that just don't want to rehearse. They don't want to do the work. And it's fine. It does show, because you don't get consistent performance. You get hit or miss performance. You get sometimes somebody's amazing, and then you see that same person who's a little off. And it's just, it doesn't have to be that way. And no. I just think when you do the work, it pays off.
I could not agree more. There's so many things I want to ask you. We should probably have 5 hours.
All right, well, we'll do part 2.
We will do part 2. I would love to do part 2.
A little follow-up.
Okay, we're going to do follow-ups. I'm going to save some of those other ones for the next one. But let's talk about that. You work regularly with stars like Kristen Chenoweth and Catherine McPhee and Eric Bergen. What does that look like when you're working with these guys?
You know what? I mean, they're all my friends. It's so, like, I met Catherine McPhee when she was on American Idol, season 5. And she's become a very close friend. Her whole family is, I'm like, they're my family. And Catherine's mom, Pisha, who's a big voice teacher, is one of my closest friends. And her other daughter, Adriana, who's also a voice teacher and a coach on American Idol, is, they're literally my family. Adriana's boy, who's going to be 2 this weekend, Catherine and I are the godparents. I mean, like, we are all family. We are family. And, and it's just so, like, they're celebrities, and yes, I love how the audience reacts to them and all that stuff, but they're just, we're one-on-one when we're working together, and just doing the work is just thrilling. Again, nobody has to be a big name for me to have fun with them. I have fun with everybody I work with, but, I mean, you know, I'm doing a show with Eric right now. We just did a couple nights at Catalina, and we're going to Las Vegas for some shows this weekend, and it's just fun. The work is fun. It's an hour and a half that goes by so quick. Even the traveling, I don't even mind. You know, traveling's not so fun anymore as like it used to be. But I just love every second of it. And I have so much fun with those people. And I love everybody I work with. And I coach a lot of people, like, for auditions. It's just, it's so much, I just can't get over it.
So you're, like, playing and arranging and coaching,
yep,
all things music related to these singers, you're doing that.
Right, and so, as a matter of fact, I'm doing, You know, like, and like for Eric's show, we have like a big 6-piece band and stuff, and yeah, a couple of singers. And Catherine sometimes works with either a big band or she works with just a trio. And you know, Kristen does these shows with either piano only. She does these intimate evenings, which are everything. And then she has a 5-piece band, and then she does a lot of symphony dates, and she adapts to every single thing she does. It's
amazing. I saw her at Disney Hall a few years ago with the entire, like, symphony behind her.
No, unbelievable.
It was amazing.
I think Kristen's going to be at this New Year's Eve back at Disney Hall again. So, yeah, we'll all have to go together.
That's a date.
Yeah, that could be fun.
That's a date. So what are some of the more challenging things about being a vocal coach, and what are some of the best things?
Well, I think the really challenging thing is when you get somebody who's full of fear or everything, just to work with that and help with that. I don't really find it challenging. I really just find it rewarding, and I love when you find a song for somebody and they just so relate to it, I love getting to know somebody, so it's easier to find them material, because I love finding songs for singers. And you know, just making it, so, you know, the problem with a lot of young singers today, and they used to say this on American Idol all the time, they're like, who are you? What do you want to be? And a lot of 17-year-old high school people don't know who they are or who they want to be. And some 30-year-olds don't know. And so, and especially like at 15, you want to explore every kind. You want to sing Adele, and you want to sing Rihanna, and you want to sing Beyonce, and you want to sing show tunes. It's like you have to find out who you are. So it's fun to explore all that. I don't think you do need to know. Those shows make you go, oh, who are you? Who do you want to be? What's your sound? You know what? You have to explore all that and find out what it is.
Yeah, it would be unusual to be that young and to genuinely know.
Absolutely. I mean, some people, yes, do, but you have to explore it. The biggest negative thing about it is, I work with a lot of young singers who will sing an Adele song and they sound like Adele. Then they sing a Beyonce song, they sound like Beyonce. And so the big challenging thing is to help people find their own voice.
Yeah.
So that they sound like them on every song.
Because we already have Adele and
exactly.
Beyonce. They're doing that.
Yeah, and we don't need to have a karaoke version of that. Unless you're doing something so different with the song and an arrangement thing, but still, you haven't found your voice yet if you're still sounding like everybody you imitate. And that comes from experience and from doing the work.
And confidence.
And a lot of confidence. And that's, again, the thrill of working with somebody and watching them get more and more confident. And it's so, I can't explain how rewarding it is.
I get it.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing for everybody involved. It really is. And ultimately for anybody who's listening.
Because exactly.
that's the gift that they get. What are some of your favorite things about being a musical director? Like, you were involved with Hairspray Live.
I know. Well, I was just the associate musical director on that. Lon Hoyt was the musical director who beautifully brought me on to that. I'm going to tell you that Hairspray Live, and I'm not saying this because your girl was in it, was the most exciting, fun 9 weeks of my life. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I knew a lot of the people in it. Of course, I had worked with Ariana before, and of course, Jennifer, and I had worked with Garrett a lot, and I fell in love with Maddie, and it was this most unbelievable, and I had kept hearing about Duff from so many people, and so when I finally got to meet her, I was like, so I geeked out the first day. I'm like, can we have a selfie? I think I waited till the second time to say, can we follow each other on Instagram?
That's
but
so cute.
People make fun of me, that's what I say when I meet people. I'm like, are we following each other on Instagram? But anyway, but it was the most unbelievable, amazing experience of my life. And I love doing all that stuff. I musical direct every year. Chris Lithgow and his wife, Becky Lithgow, do these beautiful, amazing panto shows every year.
They're
these
fantastic.
Panto Christmas shows.
They're so good.
And Ariana did one, and Sabrina Carpenter did one. They always get like a teen star. I know they've won.
Jordan Fisher did one.
Jordan Fisher did Aladdin.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah. And it's, oh my God, that boy's...
Ridiculous.
Another one I'm obsessed with.
Just ridiculously
happened
talented.
To be his birthday just yesterday. But yeah.
And such a good person.
He's, you know, that's what I love. I love working with somebody who has all of that, plus is a good person. That's part of the success. That's part of why that success is happening.
It actually is. Let's talk about that just for a second.
Yeah,
because, you know, at this point, I can say with complete confidence, like, the vast majority of people that I know that are successful in this industry in whatever capacity they're involved in, whatever that looks like, not just performers, you know, in front of, behind the camera, whatever, the vast majority are also stellar human beings.
Not a question.
And so that's interesting, isn't it? It's probably not coincidence.
I think it can't be, because though you have to be, I tell people all the time, not only is it who you know, and meeting the right people and being at the right place at the right time and having that technique, but you have to be a fun hang. Like, I feel like I kept a job at Idol all those years. I mean, there were piano guys that played circles around me, but I know what I gave and my enthusiasm and all that, that it's all part of it. You have to be well-loved in this industry. I think that people don't want to work with people that aren't well-loved or aren't team players. You know what I mean? I think it's so important to just to be respected and well-loved, and you have to be a team player. Everybody has to get along with you. And I have to tell you, I've heard stories of people, like even past American Idol kids, that are like, oh, did you see? He was so difficult. I never, never, never had one situation where I would say I had anything negative to say about anybody. First of all, the relationship between a singer and a pianist is as intimate as you can get. It's literally, I'm breathing with that person. I'm like, we are one when I'm performing with that person. And it's just, I've never had, even the people you hear about like down the road that go, oh God, she was such a diva when they, sorry, never saw it. Mm-hmm. Never saw it. Mm-hmm. And so, again, but I think it's so important because people, and we used to tell everybody and I, all the kids that are, when they were coming up on the seasons, we used to go, you got to be nice to everybody. You know that cameraman that's right here? He's going to be at the, when you're at the Golden Globe Awards or at the Billboard Awards, you want to be on camera, you be nice to everybody.
It's totally true. Actually, I'll never forget. So they were rehearsing Mamma Mia at the Bowl a couple of years ago.
Which I loved.
Which was so fun.
So I loved that version.
It killed me that there were only three performances, but that's how those are.
I know.
It's special. So there we are. We're rehearsing it in the middle of the day. And I'm looking at the camera guy, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know you. He'd been the camera guy in Liv and Maddie for three seasons. Because that's how they all do it.
They all do all the shows. That's why I say you got to be nice to everybody. And how important thanking people are. Like, get off the stage and thank the band, what they just did. You know, the most beautiful thing to see is a performer who's not selfish and who just acknowledges everybody. And I have worked with performers that forget to introduce the band or whatever. I'm like, what?
This is a team sport, people. This is not solo, actually.
It is. And you know what? In this business, a thank you goes the longest way. It's unbelievable. And people are so grateful for that. Or just a little nod or a little thank you, you helped me so much. It's everything.
Everybody's working so hard to make it all happen.
It's true. Yeah. And it is. It's a big puzzle. And you're just a little piece of it. But that part of it about being, you know, well-liked is huge.
Yeah. And that's not like luck. It has to do with your character.
Absolutely.
You know, that is something that, by the way, of all the things in this business that are out of your control, that's 100% in your control.
Absolutely.
So, for me, part of what I think about when I think about how to help people, you know, maximize their opportunity for success in this industry, you really want to focus on the stuff that's in your control, and then you want to be on top of that stuff. And this is an easy one.
That's the best point.
I love that point.
I tell people, like, when they leave an audition, if you felt good about what you just did, there is nothing. Now it's all out of your control. You're absolutely right. You can only control what you did in the room. And I love that. You got to, it's, know what you can control and the rest is out of your hands.
And you let that stuff go.
Yep. It's great. It's a great point.
And then, okay, on top of this, the overlaps are so fun. It's like, I love all the serendipities. In addition to your vocal coaching, your musical director work, you are also an accomplished pianist and composer, and you're a Yamaha artist. You wrote a song for the movie Dumplin'.
How crazy is that?
What?
So my friend Dan Finnerty, do you know Dan?
I don't.
Well, you know his wife, Catherine and Jimmy.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
So, so Dan is in the movie, and he plays the pageant MC at the end of the movie.
Yes.
So he was texting me from the airplane one night. He was coming to LA, and we were rehearsing. We did this big tribute to Kathy that I think Gay Men's Health Crisis had given her this big, huge award, this beautiful Howard Ashman Award in New York City a few years ago. So Dan was coming out because he was here for something else, and he's like, let's rehearse the number. So he's texting me from the airplane. He goes, more than rehearsing the number, I have to write this song that Ann Fletcher, the director, wants me to put in the movie.
Who's wonderful.
I love her. And so I was like, come over, let's write a song tonight. And he literally came over, we wrote a song, and it ended up in the movie.
Which is such a darling movie.
I loved that movie.
Me too.
I loved that movie. It was so sweet. Yeah. So sweet.
One of my favorite movies, really, in quite a long time.
Yeah, so the whole writing thing is, we don't have to get, I don't want to get too down.
Okay.
The writing thing is really, it's hard today. You know, the music business is not what it is. None of show business. You know, nobody's putting out records. People are putting out singles. You know, everything is streaming. I one of my dearest friends is a really famous author, Patricia Cornwell, who she's the number one female crime writer in the world, and she's living through all these changes too right now, like where she would sell millions of books. Now it's millions of downloads.
Yep.
And it's nothing.
Money's not the same.
It's
at
nothing.
All. Like, it's a fraction.
Exactly. And that's what's happening with songwriters right now. And so, and I think now more than ever, you know, now I get sheet music and there's six people who wrote the song on it. I'm like, what? Did one person probably wrote it? One person called in the Chinese food order. And they're, you know, they're whatever it is. But there's like six people's names on the
one
song.
One person contributed a couple of words. Literally.
And they're a co-writer. And I get it. I get it. I'd give away some of my songs to somebody if they want to record them. But it's frustrating today. Because unless you write with the artist or whatever, there's just not really a shot. But so working with somebody like Dan and having that song go in a movie was a thrill to me. It was so great. And I've had a few people, you know, record songs of mine I love. And I just wrote a song with my friend David Hernandez, who was on Idol. And I just wrote another song with this guy, Danny Spadaro. But there's still opportunities, and I refuse to give up. I don't... I get frustrated at the whole part of how it's changed, but you got to go with the change. And I say to young artists today, there's so many ways to get in the door now. There's no age restriction. There's no what you look like restriction. You can do anything and be anything and just be the next, for whatever reason, you can go viral. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could be the next YouTube sensation. You could find the next cover of the next song that people get millions of views.
And that's the flip side of the dilution issue in terms of, like, you know, the financial aspect. The flip side is like, oh gosh, the surface area is huge now.
It is.
And therefore, you know, the opportunities are huge and the gatekeepers still exist in some areas, but boy, there's a lot of places where there's just no gates at all.
I agree. But, like, you know, Idol, like, taught us, you know, you have to be between 15 and 28. And I'm like, no, sorry. You can be 40 now. You can be overweight, underweight. Anything. You can be anything. You can be younger. It doesn't matter. And I love that part of it. That, how the music business has changed. Like, I remember at American Idol, we started that show before there was social media. The only thing, like, season two, I remember the kids were all, huddled around a big, huge computer that's a desktop computer, and it was a dial-up modem, and they would all go on, like, the AOL message boards to see what people were saying about them. There was no Twitter, there was no... And none of
I'm
that.
I'm dying.
There was none of that.
And
it's so funny to see it change. And then it was so funny as it came over, you know, as it went through the seasons, when Twitter came, they were all the accounts were controlled, so they wanted to be careful what everyone was saying. Now, of course, they're like, please tweet, please Instagram, you know, do whatever. Tell them what you're singing. Do it. It used to be, it's so fun. It was fun to watch the change. But in the beginning, all those people sold a million records. And Clay Aiken, he was untouchable. And he was playing huge arenas. Today, you know, they have a hard time selling out the, you know, 2,000-seat performing arts centers. It's
crazy.
It is crazy. But again, there are, I love to find the positive in all of that.
Me too.
And I just, the fact that you can work with kids today, and I love to encourage everybody, if you are into it and you are passionate about it, and it makes my heart warm, and I get goosebumps when I see parents that are supportive of their kids. Again, I love my family. I have the most supportive family. They are so proud of me. I talk to them way too often, and that's why I still have a Massachusetts accent.
Aww.
But But my, I musical direct every year the Jerry Herman Awards here in L.A., which are like 30 local high schools. They each send their best boy and girl, and they compete, and they go to the National Jimmy Awards. And I love working with these high school kids, and I love seeing their parents, be a part of it. And I also wanted to tell you about this fun summer program. I do this program every summer for teens. It actually is like, I think, 15 or 16 and older. And it's this program in Florida called Broadway Theater Project. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, but we're gonna put a link to this at the end of the show notes.
My friend Pisha McPhee and I have been teaching there for about 5 or 6 years. We go up. They get so many amazing people. Donna McKechnie comes up, Ben Vereen, Todrick Hall. They get all these people that do masterclass. But it's like a 3-week intensive for people in Tampa, Florida. It's one of the most amazing programs I've ever seen. And it's singing, acting, dancing. This is the other thing that I love about this business. Since Glee, since Idol, since Smash, people now have to do everything. You have to do everything. You have to sing, act, and dance if you want to do it, like be in anything and everything. In the old days, like my friends that were like on Broadway shows, like my friend Debbie Shapiro, she's back behind the door. She won the Tony Award in 1989 for Jerome Robbins Broadway. She's one of my closest friends. I'm godfather to her 3 children. And, she won the Tony Award and came out here and casting people, like, in the old days used to say, oh, you're a musical theater person? That means you can only sing and you can't act. I'm like, what? No.
That's so insane.
It's the most insane. But today, people win Tony Awards and get a TV show, like Ben Platt, or a record deal, which I love.
That makes me so happy. It's actually true. It really wasn't that long ago that those 3 things, film and TV,
yes,
and let's say Broadway or, musical theater,
right,
theaters,
all mixed,
were utterly siloed. And those silos did not touch or mingle.
It's so
and now
true.
The silos are down.
Love.
And it's beautiful. And Kristen Chenoweth is one of the first people I think of when I'm in this conversation because she's truly somebody who can do all of that.
And she has, yes. Which is so great. But, I just love that. But so today it's like, that's why this place, Broadway Theater Project, I think is so great. They work on acting, singing, they do dance things. Now they're introducing a new thing where they're like prepping kids for college auditions and stuff,
great,
and finding material for college auditions. It's really great. And Pisha and I go down there every summer and teach, and it's really a remarkable program. And I think they have a few spots left, and I will be down there this summer. It's in, I think, the end of June. It's like a 3-week program.
Okay.
And it's, I'll give you the link later, but it's so beautiful. It's the most moving experience too. Like, I'm one of those people, like I do Kristen Chenoweth's Broadway boot camp every year too.
In Oklahoma.
I wish that were open to nationwide. It's only open to Oklahoma natives, and people, kids, that high school kids in that area. But I'll tell you that, and I did it as a favor to Kristen the first year, and I was like, all right, I'll go, because I love you, I will do anything for you. It was, I can't even tell you, it was the most moving thing. I spent the week crying, basically, we all did. It's just so moving. And now I look forward to going. This is my 3rd year, and we go on, it starts on the night of the Tonys, and it goes for a week. So I'm going to be doing that with her in June 9th, we go down there, but it's in Broken Arrow at her theater, which she'll leave as a legacy. The rest of it will be there the rest of her life, the Kristen Chenoweth Theater. It's the most gorgeous performing arts center. And she just does so much for, the arts and everything. It's remarkable. Well, we can talk
That's
about
that. That's a
Kristen
whole other conversation.
Yes, I know. We should just, like, have Kristen. Let's just have a whole hour me talking about Kristen.
Talking about Kristen. I know, and I'll throw little things along the side.
Yeah, for sure you would.
What would you tell a young person who wanted to become a professional singer today?
I tell you, I say you got to do the work, and I would encourage anybody to try it. And again, maybe along the way you discover you want to do something else instead, but that's still part of the arts. There are so many jobs in that field.
And that's okay.
It is okay, and it's great, and it's beautiful. But you should give it a try. You have nothing. I tell people they have nothing to lose. And because of the way the record industry is, the music industry, anything goes today. You can be the next thing to hit. And I encourage everybody, and again, to watch. I have so many young students that come with their parents and stuff, and I encourage the parents to come and sit, and they can sit right where you are. And I go, you can watch, you can listen, you can sit outside, whatever you want. I just, to see a supportive parent is everything to me.
You really, there pretty much is no such thing as a successful young artist commercially speaking, young actor, young singer, young performer, without at least one very profoundly supportive parent.
I have to agree with that.
It just takes that. And for anybody out there listening who says to themselves, well, I don't have a supportive parent, am I, you know, is it hopeless? The answer is no, of course not. Of course it's not hopeless. It's just, you know, it's going to be a little bit more challenging, but right. You can totally do it. And maybe you have to wait until you're 18.
Right.
To get somewhere with that. But meanwhile, there's a lot you can be doing on your own to prepare for the life you want.
Absolutely.
You could be listening to different artists. You could be singing in your room.
It's everything. And I think sometimes when you don't have that supportive parent, that the people who are lucky enough to grow up with that, it maybe even makes you want it more. And I say there's nothing that should stop anybody from trying.
Yeah.
And it's a timing game to me. And it's like you can be doing this business forever and you can go to 2,500 auditions and then you're going to book something. And I tell people all the time, go to musical auditions, that even if you're not right for something, so when that right one comes up, you're not so nervous. I can't even imagine being an actor and walking into the room, having to do an audition with a table full of people with a firing squad looking at me. That's why I love prepping people for auditions, just to like go in there and confident and all that stuff. It's important.
That is one of my mantras. I mean, you basically can't audition enough, because every time you do it, you get better at it. It's its own skill. And then you just it's like shooting baskets, you know, 10,000 times.
Yes. And one of them's going to get in.
Yes.
And it is. And the more you go and the more you do it, the easier it gets. And you're just, there's less at stake. It's like people that do it once a year, you put too much on it, and it's like, it's not right.
The whole less at stake thing is really big, I think, for success, because there's something subtle that is communicated when you just step in, and you feel confident, and you knock it out of the park, you give it what you got, and you walk out, versus coming in with this sort of sense of anxiety and neediness.
It's like, no, absolutely.
That's not what people want to hire.
No, and also the funny thing is you are being judged from the second you walk in that room. It's even before you sing.
Before.
I think they're watching how you talk to the pianist. They're watching everything. They're watching how you present yourself. Oh my God, I've had a couple of crazy, crazy, crazy audition stories, but one woman, who will remain nameless, but she came in and she was so busy. This is what I say to people. Come in, do your audition, and go. If you know something, if you know the casting person behind the table, you worked with the director before, if they don't approach you first, keep it professional. This one person came into this audition one time. She literally was so busy schmoozing with, the six people behind the desk that I'm not kidding. She, almost threw her music book at me, and she's like, you know, Over the Rainbow in E-flat. And I wanted to go, can you open your book to it?
Can you be a human with me, please?
Nothing. And because she was so busy going, oh, how are you? You know, like schmoozing with everybody. Meanwhile, it's that stuff. And so she walked out of the room and they were like, oh my God, she's so much. And I'm like, she was thinking she was, you know, being sweet and fun and whatever. I'm like, go in, do your job, and then leave. If that casting person remembers you and knows you, they're going to get up and give you a hug, or they're going to come outside of the room and say, you did such a great job, whatever. Do you know what I mean? But again, that a whole audition process is so scary and so intimidating. Anything I can do when I'm in, that's why I love doing auditions. I love giving somebody a little encouragement and just going, just keep going. Just nod to me when you're ready. You know what I mean? Like, having confidence in that room is freaking everything. And I, again, it's so scary. And you couldn't be more vulnerable, but you got to just go for it. And the more you do, the less fear you get. Or you learn to use your fear in your favor.
Yeah, that's you can all. Leverage it. You can leverage fear for energy.
Exactly.
Any advice for parents hoping to help their kids succeed in the music business?
I mean, I think, you know, the parents that, you know, listen, some people can, you know, do the music thing and pay for their kids to be having, you know, a vocal coach and working on the stuff and then taking dance classes and schlepping from, you know, Orange County up to L.A. twice a week, three times a week, or bring your kid to, you know, rehearsal at Disneyland every day for the show they just got in. It's a lot of work. I just encourage it. And I just think if your kid is that passionate about it, I have kids that say to me, I'm not sure if I want to go to school for music or I want to go to law school. And I'm like, then you should go to law school.
Period.
Yeah. Don't even.
If that's a question.
Yeah. And I'm like, I want you to say, I don't know if I want to go to music school or if I want to study drama or whatever. I'm just saying that's how passionate you have to be about it. But the parents, are my heroes. They're my heroes, and I just encourage them to do anything they can to help their kid. And listen, some parents can't do everything financially, but there's other ways to be there for them and encourage you. I mean, I encourage kids all the time. Watch YouTube videos. Like, again, I keep talking about, like, the old days of Idol. In the old days of Idol, there was no... I don't even think YouTube was barely around.
Isn't that something?
In the old days, in the later days, like, kids would come in and go, let's see that YouTube, the way that song goes, like, at halfway in. That's what I want to kind of do to my song. They didn't have that before. You know, they didn't have any of that, but... Watch everything. Listen to every style of music. Just all that stuff. And for your parents to be encouraging, everything. And for kids that don't have encouraging parents, want it more and work harder. And just when it can be yours, it'll be yours.
And if you want it, there's a way.
There is absolutely a way. Just as a hair easier with a supportive parent. But again, I didn't have it, and it made me want it more.
You found your way.
Yeah, and it just. I think it's the passion just weighed out. It's just like, I don't care what I have to do. I'm doing it.
Anything else you'd like to share?
No, but this has been such a glorious time with you, and I've been so excited about doing this with you forever. And I can't wait to tell Amy and Wendy Engelberg that I did this. And I can't wait to see your girl. But no, it's been such a pleasure. And I want people to check out Broadway Theater Project, and which we'll put the link on.
Yes, so you should follow Michael on... Twitter and Instagram, and your handle is the same on both of them. Michael Orland, O-R-L-A-N-D.
That's it.
Both Twitter and Instagram, and we're going to put in a link to the Broadway Theater Project, which is for high school students?
I think it's either 15 or 16 and up.
Okay.
I think it's, and it goes up, I think there's no cap on the range, but it's mostly high school. But again, because they're prepping you for college and if you want to go into show business, like finding material and all that stuff.
That sounds amazing. I'm going to
really,
track
so good.
That
it's
down.
So good. This woman, Deb McWaters, that runs it, is like a... She directed every... And assisted Anne Rankin on everything she did. She did Fosse. She did, I mean, every one of those shows. Dancing, all of them. She's been around for a while, and she's a pro, and she's just... the den mother of the camp, and she's great.
What a cool thing.
It's really cool. I hope maybe I'll see some of your listeners there.
I know. Well, I think a lot of my listeners, this is going to be very interesting for them, so you guys are obviously going to have to check that out, and I'm going to check it out myself. Michael, thank you so much.
You are the best. Thank you. So great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, take a second and subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com, sign up at the bottom of the homepage, and you'll get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you're a young actor or just curious about how your favorite actors got their start, buy my new book, Young Hollywood Actors, on Amazon. And if you're the parent of a young actor, you can get the Hollywood Parents Guide on Amazon too. Finally, for one-on-one coaching, invest in a consultation session with me over phone, Skype, or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. In 60 or 90 minutes, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.